Hey everybody, and welcome to the Power Slam podcast, episode number 35. Sorry it's a little bit late. I got sick. I got the cold, not the Australian flu that's killed people. But I'm back, finally. Kenny McIntosh, but joined as always by the main event, the man that you listen to this podcast for, the John Cena-hating, Power Slam-writing... I can't think of any more. That's the two things. Finn Martin. Hi, Finn.
Hello, Kenny. Hello. How are you doing? I know it's been a tough week. Listen, everyone, if you didn't know it, it's been a tough week for Kenny. He's got Shawn Michaels over. He's got a lot on right now. So, you know, I've been bearing with him. Everyone's been bearing with him. Everyone's been humouring him even more than normal.
Yeah, so I woke up on Tuesday morning and I felt a little bit groggy and I was like, oh, that's fine, I'll get through it. And then by Tuesday afternoon, I was just done. I couldn't even get out of bed. Spent Wednesday and Thursday basically in bed, just ill. Finally started to feel a little bit like a human on Friday, and then Saturday was yesterday and I had to leave. So adrenaline's kind of keeping me going through everything. So first show tomorrow, it's going to be the biggest show we've ever done. 1,000 people in Dublin.
Wow.
So Dublin is known for being the rowdiest crowd. The rowdiest crowd of wrestling fans that see these kind of shows. So the pressure to deliver 90 minutes of quality content is quite daunting, but it's a challenge that I'm up to taking, and we'll see how it goes. So
I have total confidence in you, Kenny.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Why can't you just come and do it for me? I just pay you. You can go on stage. Notice he'll just laugh that one off. He won't answer.
Yes, yeah. I don't really think that's something that's for me, Kenny. You know, maybe we'll... No, it's not for me.
You were going to pretend. So basically, we're going to have a slightly shorter podcast this week. There's going to be an overrun. The overrun from 2 weeks ago is now up as well. So basically, if you're on Patreon, there's like 3 new Power Slam podcasts. There's this, there's the overrun from 2 weeks ago, and there's the overrun from this week.
I'm hoping it's not going to be overkill, Kenny.
You know, I don't think so.
You know, we don't want to outstay our welcome.
I don't think that's possible. Now, the other thing was, the awards are still coming from 2017, but full disclosure, we just don't have the time to give it the dedication that we want to, so we're going to record it next week for definite, I promise, and it will be available, so stay tuned for that.
It is. That's it. I mean, a lot of work's gone into this, you know, like, you know, most startling physical transformation, least missed person of the year, who's still with us, of course. We've got some awards that have never been done before, so you don't want to miss this one.
So this week's going to be a little bit of a free-for-all. I don't really have a schedule or a list of what we're going to talk about, so this is maybe going to be more on Finn's side, but I guess let's kick off with a piece of news that has come out from PW Insider in the last couple of days, that Paige... apparently is no longer going to be able to perform in-ring as a wrestler for WWE. The house show match that she had where Sasha Banks had inadvertently kicked her in the back and she wasn't expecting it, so she kind of it hurt her neck. And she has a similar condition to what Edge had when he had to retire in 2011. She's 25 years old. She's just come back. She had a really tough 2017. It's kind of heartbreaking for her. What do you make of this situation and the end of Paige's in-ring career, for WWE at least?
Yeah, I mean, it happened in Uniondale, New York. We talked about it at the time. After it occurred, we were kind of thinking she was going to be all right, weren't we?
Yeah, yeah. We thought she'd be back by the Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened December 27th in a 6-woman tag team match. And yeah, and Sasha Banks, I mean, the people will have seen the footage on YouTube. It's out there. And Paige is standing there, Sasha Banks is in the corner, and she lifts her legs up and kicks her quite high in the back. And Paige goes down, and then she has trouble getting up, and the match was stopped. And it was a frightening scene, I think, for all concerned, or certainly for Paige. I imagine Sasha right now, I mean, from what I understand, Kenny, you probably know about this as well. Sasha has been receiving a lot of criticism for this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. She has been receiving a lot of criticism, and I wonder... What do you make of this? Because,
I mean, it's one of the things, like, you know, it's apportioning blame, isn't it? Like, who's to blame? And it's like, and lots of things in life, we need a good, lots of things become black and white, and people need to have someone to blame. There needs to be a victim in the situation. Here is, of course, is Paige, and we need to, then some people need to say, well, we need someone to blame for this. Who is to blame for this? Did Sasha kick her too hard? Well, it seems she did. Some people are calling her reckless. I mean, it did seem to me like, well, obviously she shouldn't have done that. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, she should have maybe kicked her a little bit lower because she was coming off neck surgery. But it didn't seem to be like a really, you know, it wasn't like the Owen Hart, Steve Austin situation that was obviously a cock-up and was obviously going to cause severe damage to the recipient, which of course was Steve Austin, of course, at SummerSlam 1997 with a tombstone pile driver where Austin was too low. And it was fairly obvious right after it occurred that Austin was going to be in serious trouble. This didn't seem as bad as that. I mean, when she couldn't get up, then at that point it was like, oh no, something has occurred here. Something unexpected has happened here. She's injured. This is obviously not a sell. But I mean, to me, I think it's a bit harsh to really heap all, even though it was Sasha who threw the kick. To me, Paige must have been, it's kind of like the Edge situation where there must have been, she can't have been robust in the first place for a kick like that to have caused this level of damage. Almost like, many other injuries over the years in wrestling where there's been like one final blow has either caused a severe injury or has been a career ender, but there was already a lot of damage there. So, you know, it was a cumulative effect type thing rather than one particular thing that caused it. It's very unfortunate for all concerned, particularly Paige, whose career, according to the report by PW Insider, they're saying that a career could be over, or they're saying that a career will be over. I mean, we don't know that for a fact. I mean, Shawn Michaels, the man of the hour, his career was over in 1998 and he came back in 2002, didn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of the anomaly, I guess, to that, because it's funny, I was talking to somebody today who has wrestled independently, not to a level where, like, I would say his name and you'd be starstruck, but he'd wrestled in his early 20s, and then he stopped wrestling, and he wrestled again in his early 30s, and he said that when he took bumps again in his early 30s, it was just so much worse than it was before. And then I think that's when he was saying that, I was kind of like, well, that's kind of even more impressive that Michaels was able to come back, I think, about age 37.
37, that's right, yeah. He was born in 65, wasn't he? July 65.
Yeah, and he was able to come back at 37 and work till he was 45. And I don't think that when he was working at 45, he was a 45-year-old in the sense of, like he was great in his early 40s. He was still, I would argue the second run's better than the first run. But,
I think most people would say that. He wasn't taking as many crazy bumps and throwing himself about as much for obvious reasons, because he was older and because he'd suffered that injury. And he was a lot smarter as a worker. I think most people would agree with that. And he got more out of less. But that was like the maturity of knowing that he'd already done all those things in his career. So people, he was moreover, so he could get, and he knew how to milk things, and to, you know, the also the power of selling was Shawn Michaels' greatest weapon to me, which made him so good, was that he knew how to sell and knew how to make everything mean as much as possible rather than doing too many things, so that the more you do, the less each means, the more emphasis you put on fewer bumps or spots or reactions or whatever, then those elements of a match mean more than somebody who just does one spot after another and doesn't sell anything or linger on, allow anyone to digest it, or et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, definitely, I would agree that he was better in his second run, but it was a different Michaels. And by that point, he was a different performer, of course. But the thing with Paige, it's a real shame if this is true and if she can't wrestle again. Obviously, terrible shame for her. I mean, she had a, as we know, she had a the relationship with Alberto Del Rio was toxic and resulted in all sorts of problems for her. She came back from that, and you know, it seemed to be a really promising time for her as a performer. She got her act together. She'd moved on from that. The company was behind her. You can see that she believed the company was behind her. And for this to happen so soon after she made a comeback, it's just heartbreaking, really. I mean, we'll see if it's over for her. I mean, you hope that she can recover. And in time, she will be able to make a comeback. I mean, she's still young enough that potentially she could come back in a year or two. Things may be different then. But yeah, I mean, obviously Sasha Banks was the one who threw the kick. But I think it's unduly harsh to blame her for ending Paige's career. Things do happen in the wrestling ring.
So yeah, hopefully there's a way for Paige to come back. Cause I think 20, like when Edge had to retire, he was in his mid-30s, and he worked for like 15 years, and he'd done everything that he was going to do. All he said publicly, all he'd ever planned to do was to do one more WrestleMania with Christian. You know, that's what he wanted to do, was kind of go out like that. Yeah. But he'd done everything. His Paige, I don't think she has done everything she wanted to do. So, yeah, it's a real shame for us. I hope that somehow she's able to, recover or find something else to do that she likes.
But, yeah, I mean, if she cannot make a comeback, I mean, the fact that the company is solidly behind her, she was involved in Tough Enough, wasn't she, a few years back as a trainer?
Yeah, she was a coach, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you would hope that WWE can find a job for her. I'm sure she would rather be wrestling for many more years to come, but I would think WWE will try and find a position for her in the company as a on-screen performer, because she knows what to do on screen, or as a trainer, or both. So, you know, it's obviously this has got to be a very tough thing for her to deal with at that age. But even if it's the worst case scenario and she cannot wrestle again, then maybe she can have a future in wrestling for many years to come still, you know, as a outside the ring. You know, I think she would have a lot to offer in other capacities.
So let's talk about Raw from this past week. What did you think of the show? We had the return of The Miz on the show. A lot of setup towards Raw 25, towards the Royal Rumble. We had Asuka defeating... Asuka was attacked by Nia Jax.
They set up
a match with them next week. We had
stunning victory of Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews over Sheamus and Cesaro.
Some may say stunning. Some may not.
What was almost as notable about this match, Kenny, was Booker apparently forgot the name of Titus Worldwide.
Of course he did. Oh, who's shocked that Booker T forgot that? Oh, God, that guy.
But I mean, when Titus pinned Sheamus with a 1980s roll-up, I mean, fans were just like, it was like, it wasn't quite 1-2-3 Kid versus Razor Ramon, but it was sort of like, I guess, 20% of that, which is still damn impressive. And I was just like, wow, look at those people. They never saw that coming.
Do you know what I love? I love the idea that, like, so the 1-2-3 Kid, when it happened to him, was like a nobody. And you're saying that Titus O'Neil, who has been around for 7 fucking years, is only 20% as effective as
the shock and the reaction. Yeah, that's what I mean in the venue. But people were still like, wow, because they never saw it coming. And I think it's really nice when things like that happen, because WWE proves that it can still surprise its audience. And a lot of people think, oh, we've seen it all. And then that happens. It's like, well, no, okay, no, we haven't seen it all. And they can still surprise you. And no doubt it will result in a rematch on Raw this week, in which the Bar will hammer Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews. But at least we got that moment, Kenny.
At least we got that moment. We had the Balor Club are now a real thing. They're not just a 1 week experiment. They got a big victory over the Champions Club. I'm not going to call them that, but Jason Jordan, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns. What do you think of Raw overall this week, and how they are building towards two pretty big shows, the Royal Rumble and Raw 25 in just over a week's time now.
I mean, it was the usual mishmash of good and bad. I thought the opening segment felt very forced. I thought it felt awkward with Roman Reigns out and Jason Jordan out tried to do the Shield fist bump, and you know, mentioned, you know, we might be the most, and Seth Rollins came out and then admonished Jason Jordan for ruining Reigns' moments. And then Jordan was like oblivious and said, we might be the most dominant three-man group in all WWE. And that was the cue for Finn Balor, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson to come out. And then they had some interaction. And then finally, Kurt Angle hurriedly booked a six-man match in the main event. I felt it was a pretty limp start to the show, Kenny. I didn't feel like any of that. I mean, Jason Jordan, to me, was the guy who had the most charisma out of all six of them. That was what I took from it. But as far as interacting and it being like a good segment, like a segment that really made you want to watch the main event, I think it was a bit of a flop, really. That's what I felt about the opening segment. What did you think?
I'm not as harsh on it as you were, but I'm not going to defend it as a classic either. I think Jason Jordan is still one of the most interesting performers on the show. Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns' disdain for him is really funny. But I thought the most interesting thing to me was Balor Club and the attempt that there seems to be to make Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson mean something again, which I like. And I have this feeling, and I think it's a long shot. I don't think it's, you know, by any stretch likely that it's going to happen. But I just have this feeling that maybe Finn Balor is going to win the Rumble and go on to challenge AJ on SmackDown for the WWE title. It's in my mind. Because there's also, you know, if you do Finn versus AJ, you've got that interesting element of what do the club do? Who do they back? Because Balor and AJ have both been the leaders at one point in time. There's some kind of nice drama there. It seems weird that a couple of weeks before the Royal Rumble, they're all of a sudden rehabbing Finn Balor. It feels like they're doing it for a reason.
Yeah, I do see what you mean. A lot of people, I've noticed that he is like, there's usually like five names floating around who are potential winners of the Rumble, and he's amongst the five. Candidates for victory in that match. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Finn Balor versus AJ Styles at WrestleMania would be a really good match. It would be an interesting match. It's a cross-brand match, and they can do a lot with it. That, of course, necessitates Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn not defeating Styles at Royal Rumble. And if they don't become champion, then that kind of torpedoes that storyline. Yeah. And I sort of feel like they need to, one or both of them needs to become champion in order to advance the storyline with Shane McMahon, which I think is definite. Well, it's obviously the lead storyline right now on SmackDown. So I'm not convinced that the title will be defended by Styles against Finn Balor at WrestleMania, because I think it could be more likely involved in a match involving Owens, Sami Zayn and Shane McMahon. I mean, I'm hoping, I mentioned this I think last week, I'm hoping this all results in a Shane McMahon heel turn, because I think he's done as much as he can as a face, and I think he could do a lot as a heel with Owens and Sami Zayn, especially if one or both of them are champion. They've sort of floated the idea that they may become co-holders of the belt, haven't they?
How very China and Chris Jericho of them.
Yeah. So I think that's the direction they're going in. So I'm not expecting it to be Styles Balor at WrestleMania. But, you know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. But I do share your enthusiasm your sentiment, rather, for reheating Gallows and Anderson. I mean, those guys have been wasted so badly for so long. So I'm glad that they're doing something that matters again. So good for them and good for WWE for putting in that position rather than just, leaving them, you know, on the scrap heap. So they're certainly better than the way they've been used for so long. So I definitely endorse that. But I mean, the main event, the main event wasn't a bad match. And we had like a storyline there where Jordan went in the ring to distract the referee, causing him to miss Rollins' tag to Roman Reigns, and Reigns was angry with Jordan. So we've got that tension between Rollins and Reigns and Jordan. And then Balor pinned Rollins. So it was a big, big win for Balor, Gallows and Anderson in the main event, even though, and at the same time, it furthered the Jordan storyline as well. So it did serve two purposes, which I thought was really good. One other thing that I found very interesting in the main event was they showed photos of Balor, Gallows and Anderson in New Japan and said they were the originals. Obviously, they didn't mention Bullet Club, but they sort of emphasised that they were the originals, and the word, the phrase "the elite" was used over and over again.
Corey Graves was calling them the most elite club that there is.
Yes, so there's definitely an acknowledgement there that New Japan, you know, maybe New Japan's rattled them a little bit, Kenny.
Yeah, and also earlier on in the show, they did a promo where they openly talked about Tama Tonga and Bad Luck Fale. Which, you know, is interesting. The thing with Finn Balor is, it's not that I really like Finn Balor. I just think he's a really solid performer, and I think that if he was given a chance, he could do some really great stuff. And, you know, he's just basically been faced. I mean, the Bray Wyatt feud killed him. Absolutely killed him.
Yeah.
I hope he does something. Actually, speaking of Bray Wyatt killing things, I feel like,
and God, can I just say, I want to see Finn turn heel. I think that's the way he moves up from where he is right now, a heel turn. That's when he's going to project more personality.
Kind of similar to CM Punk, actually. CM Punk really started to make it in WWE when he turned heel.
Yes, I agree.
But I think with what was I talking about?
You were just talking about Bray Wyatt killing.
Bray Wyatt, yeah. Speaking of Bray Wyatt killing things, I love broken Matt Hardy, and I like woken Matt Hardy, but I feel like the gag is not the laugh, and the laugh is seeming to become the gag, and I think that's a mistake. And listen, I'm sure that Matt Hardy is backstage every week pitching about, you know, let's do Hardy compound stuff, let's bring in Vanguard 1, and da-da-da. And I think that the goodwill will carry him into the Royal Rumble with this gimmick. And I think he'll get a massive reaction on post-Royal Rumble. I really hope that they find a way to make it more about just being the laugh. Because for people who've watched them before, we're kind of like, it's kind of like you keep playing the first scene of a movie. And you never play the second scene, and we're just like, we're ready for the second scene now. So I guess it's a kind of a real worried hope that he's allowed to spread his wings and kind of do more with the character, because he's so talented. Can we go back to him playing, you know, playing chess with Napoleon the Goldfish or something?
Well, but you're absolutely right, Kenny, and they need to do more with his character. They need to show us more. And you go back and look at what he did in Impact Wrestling in 2016. And it's just like, there's so much he can do. So much he can do. And so far he's done, I think I was saying 20% before for Titus O'Neil, 20% of the 1-2-3 Kid versus Razor Ramon match. How much of woken stroke broken Matt? How much of broken Matt Hardy has woken Matt Hardy given us so far, Kenny? What do you reckon? 2%? 3%? Certainly less than 5% of what he showed us as broken Matt Hardy in Impact.
I would say 5. I would say I'm going to be more kind and say 5. Because there was Napoleon the Goldfish, and he did call it the Rumble of Royalty. So, like, there are little bits and pieces, but...
Yeah.
But you're right, that's the problem. It's not that it's bad. Like, see if we'd never had broken Matt Hardy and we just got woken, I think we'd probably all love it. Because we're like, this is mental. But it's because you know what it can be. It'd be like if you went to see, I don't know, Bon Jovi and they just played B-sides. You'd be like, fucking sing Living in a Prayer! You know, you sing me the hits!
Hey, Kenny, did you know that Little Mix have provided one of the theme tunes for the Royal Rumble?
Fuck off. Are you serious?
Yeah, Little Mix. Yeah, Little Mix. I know you're a big fan.
Who told you that? The X Factor. Oh, fuck. Little Mix. This is the day the WWE died. You know Don McLean signed, but the day the music died? This is the day the WWE died, when Little Mix are doing a soundtrack. Fucking hell. Was Kevin Rudolph busy?
It was mentioned on Raw this week. Little Mix are doing, providing one of the themes for the Royal Rumble. You know, and did you know, Kenny, this year it's more Rumble than ever. Did you know that, Kenny? They only mentioned it 10 times on TV this week.
Do you know what's funny is I feel like I'm really excited about the Royal Rumble in spite of the presentation this year. Like, it's not that, like, because I think that, you know, I'm in the minority maybe, but like, I actually think the Royal Rumble match this year is really exciting. I don't think it's very, I don't think it's obvious who's going to win.
No, I agree.
There's at least five or six guys. I watched the 2017 Royal Rumble back 2 weeks ago, and I think it's a great match, actually. I think it stands up. You know, there's a great bit with Braun Strowman and James Ellsworth. They saved a load of the big guys till the end. But I think the Royal Rumble match is really exciting. I think Brock, Braun and Kane could be fun. The problem is Kane is rubbish now.
Yes.
Rubbish. Yes. And, like, I think it's a little bit... I really like Kane, and I'm going to end up probably doing a tour with him one day, so I don't want to say too much that's going to be replayed to him.
It's all coming out now.
But I do think that there's got to be an element of pride. I mean, right, let's use Shawn Michaels as an example. Vince McMahon phoned Shawn Michaels in January of 2016 and said, "Hey, Shawn, we want you to come back at WrestleMania and come out with a couple of legends and do some moves." And Shawn's like, "Yeah, cool, no problem. Who else is doing it with me?" It's going to be Mick Foley and Steve Austin. And Shawn's like, "Yeah, I'm in, no problem." And he says, "Oh, but I want you in gear." And Shawn's like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, I want all three of you in gear." And he said, "Steve Austin's going to be in gear." Knowing full well Steve Austin is not going to be in gear.
Yeah.
So Shawn decided to accept the challenge. And if you go back and watch WrestleMania 32 when Shawn Michaels comes out, I think he's in the best shape he'd been. Probably even better than the run that he had in 2002, 2010. He looked phenomenal. And then you look at Kane. And, I mean, I'm sorry, but his gut is bigger every week. And
he can't move, can he? The problem is everything. It's like he's got, like, bloody concrete in his boots. It's just like, you know what I mean?
And I'm not saying you need to do fucking Hurricanranas, Kane. I'm just saying lay off the pies. Because, honestly, I mean, that gut is just... And listen, I'm watching Retro Raw at the same time when Kane was at his peak, you know, of late 97, early 98.
Yeah.
And the comparison is just... No! Stop! Yeah.
This is one of his biggest matches in what? This has got his biggest match in what? 3 years? 4 years? Maybe more? 5 years?
Yeah, if not more. I mean, what was the last time, maybe when he was doing the feud with Undertaker in 2010? Maybe that was his last big run of matches?
He had that little run with Cena, didn't he? They had a bit of...
Rise Above the Hate. Yeah. When he had the Flashdance mask. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I think that was 2012, that.
Yeah, late 2011, early 2012. And then he shoved Zack Ryder off the stage.
That's right, yeah. And that was piss poor, as it was terrible.
So, and I like Kane. I really like Kane.
Well, it doesn't sound like it, Kenny.
No, but I think that... You know, you look at a guy like Chris Jericho, and we've talked about, you know, we talked last week about just the phenomenal performance he put in at Wrestle Kingdom at 47 years old. And I'm not saying you need to look like Jericho and you need to be in great shape, you know, but just have a bit of fucking respect about what you're doing. I mean, the fact that it looks so bad when he's wearing clothes. Imagine how bad it looks topless.
Yo, let's not think about that.
That'll make you celibate for a month.
But the thing is, you would think that he wouldn't lose the weight, so he'd enter a better performance. This is probably going to be, you would think this would be his last big match. Surely this would be his last big match. So, you know, go out with a bang, you know, get yourself in top shape, you know, and do the best you can. And you would think that would be a big motivation for him, but obviously not.
Obviously not, is the answer, yeah. So, yeah.
Elsewhere on Raw this week, as we did allude to it earlier, The Miz returned. He announced the Marine 6 has wrapped. Fantastic news.
Shawn Michaels was on the Marine 6. He was in the UK filming that. We were talking about that earlier on today.
Oh, really? I haven't seen any of the Marine movies, I have to say. I haven't seen any of them.
Maybe that's a series. No, but yeah. I was just like, Robert and I have talked about doing, you know, watching all these movies that star wrestlers. There's just something great. Like, my favourite of all time is The Chaperone. I've not watched it, but the idea that Triple H plays a despondent dad who's out of luck and he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a shirt, it's tremendous. Like, it's so bad.
And it's not so bad that it's good, it's just so bad that it's horrible.
I mean, I've not watched it, but yeah, I would imagine it's probably so bad that it's horrible.
I must confess, I haven't seen The Chaperone either.
What are we doing with our lives? We're talking about wrestling, we should be watching The Chaperone. But yeah,
and Miz is Rolling Stone's Superstar of the Year. I was going to ask you this,
because there's a lot of people in wrestling who think that that is an embarrassment, and that's a joke, that he has been given that accolade by Rolling Stone, and, you know, if you were to look at, you know, technical wrestling and whatever, that, you know, there's 100 other people you would pick. What do you think about The Miz being selected based on just the parameters of why they would pick him?
I can understand why they would choose him, because he's the sort of guy that sort of, it's easy to write, you know, it's an easy thing to write up. I mean, Rolling Stone and WWE have got the relationship, so The Miz probably, it was probably mentioned to Rolling Stone, well, if you give Miz the award, then he'll mention it on TV, so that's good for you, it's good for us. Seems like one of those, you know, one of those sort of little deals that's been put together for everyone's benefit, that's not really based on credibility. It's more of a sort of cross promotion thing. That's my opinion of it. Like a reciprocal thing, you know, that everyone presumably benefits from. I mean, it's not like Rolling Stone's this, you know, huge sort of bastion of credibility when it comes to pro wrestling. I don't believe it is anyway. So, I mean, to me, I mean, Miz had a really good 2017, but to call him Superstar of the Year, you're going to have to wait for our awards. Then you'll find out who I don't think we've got Superstar of the Year. We'll have something like that on the list.
I think we need to add Superstar of the Year.
I think we're going to have to now.
For all the other ones that we have, we have to have that
one. We're throwing down the gauntlet to Rolling Stone inside Brooks.
Yeah, why not? Well, I get why people are pissed about it, but also I'm kind of like, Roman Reigns or who else? Kevin Owens. They don't need that accolade. It doesn't really matter. Whereas this is the perfect thing for The Miz to rub in everybody's face. Oh, Rolling Stone. I mean, Rolling Stone have Little Mix in the cover nowadays. That's how cool Rolling Stone are now. Rolling Stone are not what they were in the 80s. Let's be honest with ourselves. Rolling Stone used to be like a publication that kids would, like, you know, it was rock and roll, and now it's not that. But
now it's The Miz and Little Mix.
Now it's The Miz. That's how the mighty have fallen. You know, Annie Lennox used to paint her hair orange and walk through a field with sheep. Now it's The Miz. What can you do? But I think that he, you know, I think he had a good week back this week. He cut a good promo. He attacked Roman Reigns after the main event. He's set his sights back on the Intercontinental Championship. I think he should win it back from Roman Reigns. I think he's a great Intercontinental Champion. And I don't know if I'd quite say that kids now today think of him in the same breath as we did of Randy Savage, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. But I take his point. So I thought he had a good week back. I think if we were doing sort of like awards of the week, I would say that Miz was the MVP of Raw this week.
Yeah, he did very well, yeah. I mean, I am looking forward to the Reigns versus Miz match at Raw 25. I do also foresee a title change, just to really free Reigns up to then concentrate on the Universal title picture. And I think after Raw Rumble, I'm not saying Reigns is winning the Raw Rumble, but after Raw Rumble, we should start seeing that direction take shape. If Reigns doesn't win the Raw Rumble, I'm not quite sure how they're going to get to Reigns Lesnar, but that's a story for another time, you know, and that's a development for another time. I think we should also mention the angle with Braun Strowman and Kane and Lesnar. That was quite a well-produced angle, that. I mean, they must have, you know, a lot of camera angles there. And to do that safely without hurting anyone, I thought that was quite an achievement.
Yeah, no, I thought it's funny. My favourite sort of unintentional comedy moment was Brock Lesnar. Paul, I don't want to go!
Oh, yeah.
So good.
That was pretty funny, yeah, when he's on the stretcher. Oh, but when Strowman's there, somehow he found a grappling hook in a box. He knew exactly that there'd be a grappling hook in this box. I thought that was quite funny. Why would there be a grappling hook in the box? And then he pulls, like, the truss tower over. And, I mean, we'll see what the follow-up is next week. Generally, the follow-up is pretty rubbish when it comes to these type of things. But we'll see what happens on Raw this week. And also another thing that did amuse me, Kenny, from it was that everyone was rushed to Brock Lesnar, said, "How are you doing? Oh, it's terrible." You know, and put him on a stretcher, put him in an ambulance, and poor Kane just had to walk off under his own steam, you know?
Don't worry, they probably just cooked some sort of fucking rigatoni for him and let him smell it, and he ran towards it.
Man, this guy's like in his 50s, give the old boy a hand.
Listen, the thing is, see, I'm more forgiving of someone who can't move compared to the visual of what they have, because to me it's like the visual is what you need to focus on. You know, like Hogan could do fuck all towards the end. At least he still looked like Hogan.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one good. Did you ever see that video of him when he was doing the TNA house show and it was a 6-man tag and he tried to do the big boot to Bobby Roode and he could only put it to his knee?
Oh, no, I didn't see that, no.
As someone who grew up loving Hulk Hogan, it was the most heartbreaking thing I've ever seen in my life.
I guess he thought, well, that's on a house show, so it's not going to be recorded. So, you know, if it looks bad, it doesn't really matter. Because he was a guy that was always quite careful about doing things like that. I mean, my lasting memory, if he had the match with... he had the match at Bound for Glory, didn't he? Was that with Sting? I think it was with...
it was Sting. And
It was all right.
But remember, they were going to do a match the following year, and it was going to be him and... Was it him and Bubba Ray? Because Bubba Ray was doing the thing with Brooke.
Brooke, that's right.
And they were doing like a tag match or something that didn't pan out.
Yeah.
But the moral of the story is, if you're gubbed, stop wrestling.
Yes.
And, I mean, you know... Fair play to Kane. If they call you and say, "Hey, we want to put you in the main event at Royal Rumble with Braun and Brock," you're not going to say no.
Exactly.
But I just think that...
I mean, he's running for mayor, for God's sake.
But does that mean you have to consume as much food? Is that part of the mayor cycle? I mean, look at Booker T. I mean, he's lost his mind, but he's not put on any weight.
No, you're absolutely right.
Who would you rather have a dinner with, Booker T or Kane?
Well, I think it probably would be Booker. Even that might sound madcap, that suggestion. But I think Booker has had, you know, he's had a very interesting life. You know, I mean, he grew up like dirt poor. You know, I mean, obviously he did time. You know, after the Wendy's robbery. You know, and he's a guy that turned his life around and, you know, married Charmel. He was like Miss Black America. You know, he's a very successful guy now. And seems to have a very good life for himself as well. So, I mean, we sit here each week and we sort of mock him for the ludicrous things he says. But, I mean, you know what, Kenny? He's doing better than you and I are.
Speak for yourself. I mean, you know, do you know what? The thing about Booker T is that it's the fact that we all still... Like, so I remember, I think we've said this in the podcast before. So we're sitting in Manchester Arena. And so you got it right. So... I'm going to try and find that you can't really have an opinion on this because you don't understand. So everybody who's listening to this, like me, probably grew up loving Power Slam magazine, right? And you read what Finn thought and you read the opinions and all that. Imagine that you then get to a wrestling show and you're sitting with Finn watching it and you're going, right, I can't be a complete mark. I can't fanboy too much. But then you're nervous about it because you're like, well, what if I want to get up and... scream something, he's just sitting there going, oh, for fuck's sake, look at this guy. So you're worried about how it's going to go. So anyway, we get the beers in, because, you know, naturally. And yeah. And we're having a beer. And the moment that just broke the ice of everything was Booker T's music hit. And you would have thought that Hogan had won the title at WrestleMania 9 again. Everybody's going mental, and we just looked at each other and we just went, you just can't explain it, can you? People still love him.
They do. People still do love him, and you think, well, why? And I guess it's his pedigree. You know, I guess he's, you know, he was. Did you know
that's
Kenny was
a
five-time WCW World Champion? Did you know that?
He's not mentioned it in the last couple of years. Booker T, fair play to him. You know, the thing that I've always thought with Booker T is I'd love to talk to him, long form. My only worry is I read his second book not too long ago, where he talks about his WWE run stuff, and I think one of the most fascinating points of his career is the Triple H feud of 2003. And I'm not saying that you I understand the politics of working for a company, and you can't really fully say what you would maybe want to say, but he basically made out like, you know, well, you know, when we did the feud in 2003 and Triple H, the character, would say, people like you don't win world titles. It was never meant to be about black people.
Yeah.
If you watched at that time, you know that's not the case. You know that it was absolutely meant to be... It wasn't meant to be about black people, but it was meant to make you think that it was. And then, you know, the way that Triple H would pin him at WrestleMania 19, where he pedigreed him and then waited, like, what, a minute until he pinned him?
Oh, it wasn't that long, but it was a long pause, and it was just like, what? Yeah, I know you just said that, just, you know, it wasn't really a minute. I know you know that, Kenny. There was a long delay, and it seemed to have been done to make a point, didn't it? That delay seemed to have been done to humiliate Booker.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that that's something that I would love to explore with him. Here's the thing. I think that you should be able to criticize something that Triple H has done as a character. It doesn't mean you don't think he's good. I still think there's value in Triple H being in main events now and then. I argue more that part of the reason I'm so frustrated sometimes with him is because I actually hold him to higher regard than I do some other people. Yeah, I think that he is such a big star that he should do better in how he presents himself. That's the compliment. You know, and I think people misinterpret that sometimes, that they think you're just trying to, you know, be cool and dislike.
Tearing down, you know, I'm tearing him down. It's like, oh, no, this guy, we know this guy can do these things. Go back to the 2005 feud with Batista, where he sort of made Batista a star and couldn't put him over anymore.
Go to WrestleMania 30 with Daniel Bryan. Look at what he did there. Look at, he basically set Daniel Bryan up that night of, go win the title. I've put you over and I've done everything I need to do.
You're right. I mean, that was one of the greatest one-night stories that company has ever told.
Yeah, so I think Booker would have an interesting story to tell. But
I think Kane's a guy that I think would be fascinating as well, because he's done so much and he struggled for so many years before he became Kane in 1997. You know, he was the fake Diesel, he was Isaac Yankem. He played this, I think, was it the Christmas Creature or something in Memphis?
Yeah, the Unabomber or something as well.
Yeah, he was in Smoky Mountains. So he did, I think it was the Christmas Creature. Look it up. Hopefully I'm not wrong about that.
No, you are right. He did play that character.
Yeah, and it was just like, what is this? And, you know, the guy persevered. I mean, can you imagine what he was going through when all those gimmicks failed? And that's an inspiration, really. That somebody could believe in it as much as he did, that he would persevere for as long as he did. I mean, most people would have quit. Most people would have said, this is not working for me. I'm going to get a job, you know, as a florist or something. Or whatever, I don't know. I can't imagine that Kane or Glenn Jacobs would have become a florist. He probably would have become, you know, security guard or whatever. I don't know, maybe something completely different. He would have retrained to be, a doctor, but not a doctor of dentistry.
Kane was his last chance.
His last chance in 97, and just amazing, you know, with Paul Bearer and The Undertaker. And it's like over 20 years now that he's been a star there. It is quite extraordinary when you think about it. So I'm sure he would have a fascinating story to tell as well. So I would like to speak to both of them, or spend time with both of them, Kenny.
I'll set up.
Thanks very much. I look forward to it.
So what we're going to do, a very, very weird way to do it, we're actually going to cover SmackDown on the Overrun this week for something different. But on the main show, there's something else I want to cover with you, and I want to get your opinion on two things before we go. You remember the interview that Roman Reigns did not too long ago where he said that he thought he was the best in-ring performer in wrestling? That was what he said.
I remember it.
Now, Kenny Omega's had a response to that, which I thought was pretty interesting. I want to get your take on it. So here's what Kenny Omega had to say about what Roman Reigns had said in his straight-to-the-source interview with Corey Graves, where he called himself the best in-ring performer. Omega says, "I don't know if Roman was put up to saying a comment like that from a social media team or if it was something that he consciously thought of himself, but I thought it was pretty smart of him to say that, because it became instantaneously a topic that people were talking about, and just because it sounds so ridiculous, you know what I mean? By no means do I actually think he believes those words. There's no possible way. I don't have to feel like I have to speak up about it. It is what it is, and I understand it's a fun thing for fans to generate interest in the product. I take absolutely zero offence in him saying it, especially since it's quite clear that the fact of the matter is much, much different." What do you make about Roman's comments and Kenny Omega's response? Because some people would say Kenny Omega is the best in-ring performer today, and you know, he's definitely in the top, in the contention anyway.
Yeah, or Kenny Omega, I mean, look at the year he had, 2017. He's incredible. Absolutely outstanding performer. But getting back to Roman Reigns, Kenny, I believe that Roman Reigns believes it. I think he's convinced himself that's true. And maybe that's not an arrogance thing. A lot of people say, well, let's say it's a conceit thing.
Is he in a bubble? Is it a bubble of believing it?
Possibly, but I think a lot of it, especially when you're in a worked business like pro wrestling, it's the same as being an actor or whatever. Or, I mean, if you're in a real sport, like athletics or whatever, say you're a 100-meter sprinter, you can say you're the best in the world if you beat everyone else. You know you're the best, don't you? But in pro wrestling, because everything's predetermined, how do you know you're the best? Yeah. What's the barometer of success? What's the gauge? What determines accurately who is the best? And there really isn't, you could say, well, if Finlay says you're the best, then you're the best. I'm just kidding. No, but seriously, you know, who decides who's the best, Kenny? Who decides?
Well, you know, it's funny, because something that is a very unpopular opinion, and I get it, is that I like watching New Japan now and then, but it's not for me on a regular basis, and I enjoy the WWE style of stuff more. I think WWE do a lot of stuff that I would change, but I don't think WWE is a terrible product, or it's like, you know, you shouldn't spend your time watching it and all that kind of stuff, but it's one of those things, like, some people think that No Country for Old Men is a great film. I felt like I died inside when I watched it.
I thought it was an amazing movie. Why did you not like that film?
It just didn't click for me. And I think, you know, it was a very slow movie. But I think if you got the story and you were into it, then it worked. But it didn't work for me. And I can't explain why it didn't. It just didn't. But I don't think that makes me right or somebody else. It's subjective, you know. So,
of course it is. You're absolutely right, yeah.
But there's a kind of ethos at the moment, especially in wrestling, that, you know, New Japan is the best, and that's it. And, you know, Okada and Omega is the best thing ever. And if you have any other opinion, you're an idiot. But some people think Braun Strowman's the best thing in the world because they just love seeing a big bastard beating people up. Some people think Roman Reigns is the best thing ever. Some people think that AJ Styles is the best thing ever. Some people think that it's, you know, The Miz. Everybody likes different
things. I'm sure there's some people out there, Kenny, who think Little Mix are the greatest band in the world.
And those people are entitled to their opinion. I would also just recommend that they go to the GP and just have a wee check. Just see if everything's functioning okay.
And Rolling Stone thinks The Miz is the best.
But that's fine. I don't understand why people, like... So, right, my favourite wrestler ever is Hulk Hogan. He was my favourite growing up. But it's not about whether I think he's technically the best, but he was my favourite. So,
yeah.
But it doesn't mean that I'm wrong or right because he's my favourite. There's other people who love... I'm trying to think of another example.
Like Ric Flair, for instance. Ric Flair, yeah. Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, who's the best, wasn't it? You had Hulk, who was the main man in WWF. You had Ric Flair, who was the main man in Jim Crockett Promotions, or the NWA, if you want to call it that. And like, well, Ric Flair's better than Hogan. Oh, no, Hulk Hogan's better than Flair. So you had that sort of big argument. It was like the never-ending sort of debate, wasn't it, until we finally met.
Yeah, and that's kind of the... So I think my sort of like, you know, hippie opinion today is just like, see, if you love something, great, just love it. Like, don't rag on other people. Like, there's some people who just, you know, will rag on other people for them thinking something else is good. And yeah. I just don't understand it because, you know, like, so for me, I like watching Wrestle Kingdom once a year, and I like watching the odd New Japan match here and there, and that's kind of all I like. I don't have a desire to watch all of the G1 or anything like that. It doesn't mean it's not good, but it's frustrating that you're told, because you don't love that, that you're wrong.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, it's like there's so many different forms of pro wrestling out there. Find the one that you like and enjoy that. And if there's that one over there doesn't appeal to you, then don't watch it. And let other people get on with it, you know. And if they want to rave about it, well, that's up to them. But, you know, let them have their moment there enjoying that. You know, getting back to Roman Reigns, I believe that he believes he's the best, because that's what's going to drive him to go out there and have the matches he has and represent WWE. I mean, I think most would agree right now that he is the top face in the company, or has been chosen as the top face in the company. You know, other people have cheered far more than he is, but WWE has said, this is our flagship. This is our guy. This is our man. So in order for Reigns to believe and in his own mind to fulfill that role, he has to believe that he's the best. You know, that's the way I look at it, is that I can believe that Reigns believes that he's the best. And that's what's enabling him to perform. Because, I mean, there's no doubt that he's very good in the ring. You know, a lot of people say, oh, he sucks and all that. And a lot of that's down to a pathological hatred of the man. You know, and the fact that he's been pushed beyond other performers on the roster who people would rather were in Roman Reigns' position. So Reigns is a really good in-ring performer. There's no doubt about that. Do I believe he's the best in the world? No, I don't believe he's the best in the world, but I can believe that he believes he is.
Do you think for him being in the position that he's in, do you think he kind of has to believe it?
Yes, I think he does. I think he absolutely does, because if he's going in there and he's not having any confidence and you're told, you know, neither of us has used the believe that joke yet, Kenny. How have we got to this point without even using that joke?
I think Jason Jordan's got a patent on it for like the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, but I think Reigns has to believe that. He has to believe that he is the best wrestler in the world, because he's with a company that is the biggest company in the world. So the fact that he's the top man in the biggest wrestling company in the world, or sports entertainment company, whatever you want to call it, that there is evidence or confirmation in his mind that he is the best, because he's been chosen for this role. And if Kenny Omega was the best, he'd be in that role instead of him.
Last thing I want to bring up before we move on to the Overrun, it was in the Wrestling Observer newsletter this week that the two main events for WrestleMania are pretty much set in stone as of right now. One of them we've talked about before numerous times, Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. The other one, which I guess may be surprising to some people, not to others, we've talked about it a little bit, is John Cena versus The Undertaker. So my question for this week for you is, you know, the streak's not on the line, and I've seen a lot of people talking about it back and forth about, is it too late? There's Bruce Pritchard on a recent podcast has said that he's heard rumblings that since Undertaker's hip surgery that he had last year, he looks and feels better than he has in 10 years.
Wow.
So my question, all in encompassing, is John Cena versus Undertaker, do they have a chance to make this a big blockbuster classic WrestleMania match, or has the ship sailed?
I think they've got a good chance of making it a memorable match, because the Reigns-Undertaker match last year didn't live up to anyone's expectations. So one imagines that it will be better than that. So they're actually coming in a really good position because people aren't really expecting Undertaker to wrestle again. And after that performance last year, people are like, So if he comes out there and they have something that's a good match, not a very good match or an excellent match, but a good match, that by comparison will seem like a very good or an excellent match because the Reigns match last year was such a disappointment. So I think they've got a good shot of pulling it off. The fact that, you know, they've both got the pedigree, it should have the atmosphere. I mean, I hope it has the atmosphere because some Undertaker matches haven't had the atmosphere at WrestleMania. Obviously, the Lesnar match in 2014 really didn't have the atmosphere that it needed to really elevate it into something better than it was. I actually quite enjoyed the match. I thought it was a good match. A lot of people said it wasn't, and a lot of that was down to the fact that it didn't have the atmosphere. So, you know, you would think Cena Undertaker, it's going to have the atmosphere because Cena usually does bring that atmosphere.
So do you, for you, as someone who is a big critic of John Cena, he didn't have a very good 2017, started well with the AJ Styles Royal Rumble match, but kind of fell off a cliff with WrestleMania, Battleground, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, etc.
Yes.
What do you think Cena needs to do as a performer to make this Undertaker match work? Because if he goes in there as a certain type of John Cena, it's going to tank. Like, I feel like he needs to... Do you know what I thought was the most real thing that John Cena did in the whole 2017?
Tell me.
He was doing a promo with The Miz about 2 weeks before WrestleMania, and Miz was, you know, giving him shit about, you know, you're a robot, you tell Nikki you love her, you've got all your house rules, and you don't want to be here, you're away to Hollywood, you know, all this sort of stuff. And Cena at one point just said, if I was getting what I want, I'd be standing right here with The Undertaker right now. And I thought, that's real. That's what you want. That's what you want. That's what you want to be doing. That's where you want to be. You don't want to be here with The Miz. You want to be here with The Undertaker. So,
yeah, and it was also just classic Cena as well, wasn't it? On the other side,
yeah, just him just burying who he's working with, but
just doing a giant piss on his opponent.
So, to kind of leave us in the main show, what do you think Cena needs to do as a performer to make sure this Cena-Undertaker match is more of a classic than a Roman Undertaker, I guess?
Well, he won't be allowed to play any of his games with The Undertaker, so that's really good. He won't be able to do his funny laughter and his pantomime wrestler performance, which we got at Survivor Series. There's going to be none of that with The Undertaker. It'll be serious through and through. So that's setting it on a very, very good course from the off.
There's a rumor, and I want to put it out there. You know, Undertaker very clearly left the hat and the gloves and the jacket in the ring. And
yeah.
There's a lot of people saying, are we going to get Biker Undertaker? Are we going to get more of a Mark Calloway coming back now?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I mean, that there is going to have to be addressed, isn't it? Because they made such a meal of it at the time, that can't be glossed up. You know, that can't be the same category as Natalya's meltdown at the last pay-per-view, which hasn't been mentioned since. You know?
Yeah, she's fine now. She's absolutely fine.
Yeah, phew, what a relief. It would have ruined my year if she wasn't. But it's no, that's going to have to be addressed. So, yeah, maybe there's going to be a character change, I would think. I don't know. I know that Undertaker is obviously held in such high regard in the company, and rightly so. He'll get the red carpet treatment in terms of the booking and the presentation and everything. And, you know, this is a big match. This could be seen as last big match for the company. I mean, we'll see where it all goes for him. I should mention that Ferdinand movie ended up having tremendous legs. Actually came off, started really poorly at the box office, but ended up doing quite well as a film. So, I mean, he's in a much better position as a result of that in terms of, you know, what he's going to be offered in terms of box office and salary and things like that, movies, because that Ferdinand was originally predicted to be a massive bomb. So, I mean, there's going to be more offers coming his way. So we don't know how much longer Cena's going to be around. So this could be his last big, big match as well. So you would think that they're going to go out, you know, go into this with all, you know, all guns blazing. You know, I can't say I'm really that excited about the match, but I am interested in seeing the setup. I'm very interested to see how everything plays out in the run up to the match. That's what I'm more interested in than the match itself.
It's going to be interesting because the Undertaker. You're right. I mean, because they've done things before where they've glossed. You know, the Undertaker Bray Wyatt thing kind of like it didn't happen. Like it was just this weird one night thing at WrestleMania 31, and you know, the story that people really talk about is WrestleMania 30 to SummerSlam 2015 with Brock. That's kind of just the anthology of Undertaker's feud. So I think if they do try and just ignore last year, or I think it'll be a real detriment to storytelling if they do.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they need to come up with something. I mean, hopefully they will do. I mean, Cena's obviously been the top merchandise seller for ages, and he was the top chosen as the top guy before they announced he's supplanted by Reigns, and many people would say that Cena is still the top guy there. I'm not going to debate that here now. I mean, he obviously still is a major star in the company, even as a part-timer. So you would think that this match should succeed. It should succeed. If it has the atmosphere, which I think it will, it'll be considered a success. And also, as I've said, they're coming in a strong position because last year's match was a bit of a flop. So even if it's, you know, only sort of fairly good or good, I think it will be remembered quite fondly. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to setup. I'm looking forward to the announcement of this. Yeah, the announcement of this and just how it all plays out. I understand that Cena's going to be on every Raw and some SmackDowns. Or is it every Raw after Raw Rumble?
Yep.
So they've got plenty of time to get tell the story that they need to tell.
They have. That's all the time we've got to tell the story that we've had to tell this week on the Power Slam podcast. So we're going to go into the overrun, talk about SmackDown quickly and just kind of what happened there, our thoughts on that show. But Finn, if people want to buy one of your lovely ebooks, or they want to say hello, or they want to just get in touch, where can they do all of that with you on the internet?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Finlay Martin or at Power Slam Online. You can go to my website at finlaymartin.co.uk. I actually wrote a new blog this week. I wrote a story about, if you can believe it, Kenny, wrestling and Basil Brush. She wrote a story about pro wrestling and Basil Brush.
I've read it. It's very much worth a read. It's very funny.
So, yeah. Go and check that out. I think people will find that amusing. So where can people find you, Kenny?
Well, I've not wrote an article on anything, and I've spent most of my week in bed, and I had day and night nursing and knocked myself out. But you can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or inside_the_ropes. I hope to see a lot of you at Shawn Michaels this week. I know I'm going to see Finn in Manchester this Wednesday. He's going to storm the stage and super kick Shawn Michaels, and I'm going to end up with a lawsuit. But until then, the tour's going to go great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the show, Kenny. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to, you know, I know you're going to pull it off. It's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to it. Really am.
So that's it from Finn. That's it from me. We will see you next week. Go over to Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes to get the overrun and to get this podcast 24 hours early. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week. If I be tonight, if I said tonight.